Erev Tov to all of you. I'm continuing on the discussion that we began last Tuesday night when I was zocheh to share with you thoughts from Hagaon Rabban HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, and I'll continue the next while sharing further thoughts on the issue that we have been talking about. We have been discussing in this series the work ethic from a Torah perspective. And in general, the topic, of course, is also related to one's engaging the world at large. Namely, we're referring to what Chazal call Chochma v'Agoyim Tamin. There is a fair amount of knowledge and wisdom in the nations of the world as well. So a number of people actually shared with me a thought which I want to indicate that Hagaon Rabban HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal was also quite aware of this as well. Namely, we have spoken about combining Torah study together with work, with malacha, with profession, with secular knowledge, but clearly not all of us are affected in the same way. There are many perspectives. If someone has an inclination to become a great posek, undoubtedly his education will have to be balanced differently than someone who has the talent to be a great chemist or an influential diplomat. And Rabban Soloveitchik Zatzal mentioned that if his grandfather, Rab Chaim Brisker, Rab Chaim Soloveitchik, never studied science, does that imply that he was somehow lacking in his Avas Hashem, in his love of Hashem Yisbarach? We already mentioned the Rambam, who discusses the study of Teva as a requirement for someone to come to Avas Hashem. The Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, when he speaks of how one can come to an appreciation of Hashem Yisbarach, when one examines the beauty, the majesty of the creation, Marabu Masecha Hashem Kulam B'chochma Asisa Mala Ha'arz Kinyanecha. And that leads one to Avas Hashem. And yet there were many, many great Talmidei Chachamim, many Gedolei Yisrael, who never studied the secrets of secular knowledge. Hagoyin Moran, Rabbi Shafayin Tzitzik HaTzadik Debracha, writes a number of times in his Tshuvos that he was never exposed to anything in the secular world. The focus of his entire life was Limud HaTorah. And that is something also clearly which is legitimate completely. And the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, as we mentioned, indicates that one can come to Avas Hashem also through Limud HaTorah. The Rambam has two different methodologies we actually discussed in the shiur that we gave on Tuesday night. We mentioned Perek and Tehillim Yud Tes. There are two approaches to coming to Hashem Yisbarach. That's how many Rishonim learned that Perek and Tehillim. One approach is by examining the world of science, by seeing the fingerprint of Hashem in every single aspect of Teva, of nature, in all of its wonders, and all of its splendor, and all of its beauty. Hashemayim Mesabim Kvod Keil, U'masi Yadav Magid Rakia. However, as we mentioned in Bet Yisres, in the middle of that Perek and Tehillim, suddenly, Toras Hashem Temima B'Shivas Nafesh, Eidus Hashem Ne'amana Machimas Pesi. And the Rishonim, all the Mefarshim, and that Perek and Tehillim indicate very clearly and unequivocally that there are two methodologies, there are two approaches, there are two modus operandi where the one can utilize to come to Hashem Yisbarach. One is by examining the Bria from a perspective of a scientist, and the other is through the lens of the Torah, Hakdosha. And it's clear, the Mefarshim note, that the preferred method is the Torah Seinu Hakdosha. And that's the entire mandate of that Perek and Tehillim, Perek Yutes. So that's the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos of Deyu B'Torosso and the Rambam in Yesodei HaTorah, that one comes to Hashem through Teva. So undoubtedly, there's no question there are two different approaches. So for many of us, perhaps most of us, we have to utilize the combination of both. But undoubtedly, there's no question there are great Talmidei Chachamim and great Gedolei Yisrael that their methodology was exclusively that of Torah. Their primary medium for attaining the love of Hashem is Barach is Bilimad HaTorah. Undoubtedly, nature and science, when studied hand in hand with Torah, can also serve as a medium for Avas Hashem. Those who are not involved in the study of Torah can only obtain a very small degree of appreciation for the greatness of Hashem is Barach. That greatness primarily and preeminently comes from Limud HaTorah. And so, certainly Gdol Yisrael, the great Manhigim of Klal Yisrael throughout the Doros, who were totally steeped in the study of Torah, are not obligated or necessarily expected to study other subject matter when they're quite capable of deriving all their love from the study of Torah. And although the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah that knowledge of the sciences will enhance one's love of Hashem, there's a letter among the fascinating letters of the Rambam, letters found on page number one, a letter that really is incredible because the letter number one describes the Rambam in terms of aspects of his personal life. But the focus of the letter is, as I mentioned once before, why one should study philosophy and science, primarily as an aid to understanding the Torah, to enhance my knowledge of Torah, and to present an image to the world at large of the beauty of Torah and what it offers. Why did the Rambam not mention the concept of growing in love for Hashem Yisbarach, of Avas Hashem? He does not mention that in this letter. We'll read parts of it in a moment. The Rambam himself, who was totally immersed in the study of Torah, clearly had no need for philosophy and science to deepen his Avas Hashem. But he studied all those other areas, and the Rambam's knowledge was prodigious. The Rambam was a colossus. Kimad, not area, we don't know any area of knowledge that the Rambam didn't have some familiarity with. Every single type of Avodah Zarah, of idolatrous worship, every kind of necromancy, every kind of sorcery, the occult, the Rambam was knowledgeable in every area, in the area of medicine, so many different areas. The Rambam had such a broad base of knowledge. And unquestionably, the Rambam actually indicated that the thrust of everything that he did was to enhance his connection to Hashem and his Torah knowledge. He writes over here in this, on page number one, very fascinating letter that's written, a series of letters to Rabbi Yonasan HaKoy Milunel, to the Chach Milunel. The Rambam says, Modi ani Moshe Elecha Rav HaKoy Rabbi Yonasan, that when you pen your questions to me, I was extremely overjoyed. And I said to myself, Baruch Hashem, that there is such a personality like yourself, and you're someone who can understand the secrets of the Torah. And I said to myself that, Baruch Hashem, harezach, lemeshiv nefesh, or lechalkel sevasech. Whatever you asked was right on target, and you asked very pointed questions. And the Rambam says, Al tira ki itcha ani, I'm with you. And I've already responded to all your questions. And even though I delayed, the Rambam was not able to respond to Rabbi Yonasan HaKoy Milunel for a number of years. And he writes the last two lines of page number one, Im lo mida'oga midvar hecholi, the Rambam apparently was ill, was sick, umeirov ha-mahumos, and the turmoil that was going on in the world at large and Rambam's life, kemo shana amadati b'cholye, he was apparently very, very sick for a year. And now the Rambam calls himself a Cholo Shema Sakona, page number two. Vani Rov Hayom Mesev Alamita. The Rambam was bedridden for an entire year. Vol Hagoyim Al Tzavorei Bidiri Arifuos, Shemipu Eskochi, Vlo Inichu Lishach Asloman Hayom, Vloman Alayla. Umani Yochol Asel Sachashi Yotzah Tivi Berov HaRotzos. The Rambam was very famous as a doctor, was very successful, and obviously many people came to consult him. Many people came to ask the Rambam for his ministrations. And then he writes further, I'm not as young as I used to be. Elokochi koshal v'libi kotz, v'ruchi kotzu l'shoni kovda v'yodi rasha. The Rambam writes that my hand is shaking. Apil lichto v'geres k'tana e'otzel. And therefore, he's apologizing why he did not respond forthwith, immediately, to all the questions that were posed to him. What a unbelievable, fascinating insight into the life of the Rambam, the persona of the Rambam. Really, does the Rambam reveal this kind of information, this kind of very personal type of information. And he indicates at the end of the paragraph, he's surrounded by people who apparently make his life miserable, who are, as they say in simple Hebrew, they are on his case. So now, in the next paragraph, which is the one that we cited, which is the primary intent of this letter, the Rambam indicates why he engaged in the study of the secular world. This is the psukim from Yirmiyahu HaNavi, where Hashem tells the Navi, you are destined to be a Navi at a very early stage. The Rambam paraphrases that language of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and he indicates this is what apparently his destiny was, to spread Torah far and wide. And in the fourth line, be ayela sahava v'eshes nuurai. That's the Rambam's love, his passion. Asher b'avosa shagisi mibchurai. From the time he was a very young man, he was doting on Torah, focused on Torah. The afgamzos noshim nochios nasulot soros. And then the Rambam again, based on psukim in Tanakh, speaks about the fact that there were bodies of knowledge that obviously he felt constrained to study, namely like foreign women, Moabios, Ammonios, Adomios, Sidonios, Chitios, Volkel Yodea, Hashem knows, Ki no nilkechu mitchila el liosola lirakochos uletabochos ulaofos. There are two functions why the Rambam engaged in the study of all these areas of secular knowledge. Why? They were to enhance his Torah knowledge. They were to somehow broaden his base. Secondly, to show the nations of the world the beauty of the Torah. Rambam indicates that obviously they put a strain on the time that he would utilize normally to engage in the study of Torah. 10 years the Rambam spent on his magnum opus. You people can appreciate what I did on page number 3. What the Rambam did in Mishnah Torah was essentially a synthesis of Kol HaTorah Kula. He went ahead and had to go ahead and navigate the shoals of the entire corpus of Torah. The Rambam indicate that certainly that he is a human being in the sense that he's prone to error. Vashicha mitzuyav akol v'kol shkem biskeinim. He's older. Umnei kol elu asibas roi v'chapes bidvoi v'liv dog acharei. The Rambam, in a very beautiful way, the Rambam indicates that that which he wrote is open to critique. He's not beyond critique, the Rambam says. You can go ahead and examine and scrutinize that which I wrote. Val yoma akorei b'chiburei kimei ha'odom shiov acharei ha'melech. That Ke'ilu, there's no way you're going to question the Rambam. On the contrary, according to the Psukim of Megillas Esther, Vayova Haman, and the response that Haman arrived on the scene, or if you will, all the critics, all the detractors, and the Rambam welcomes them. B'tov v'gdola asisa mimi, atem achacham v'chol mishayim tzadova v'yodiyeni tova yigmaleni, whoever has constructive criticism, the Rambam says, they're welcome. The idea was to put out a chibur that would be, Baruch Hashem, in terms of its ultimate ideal perfection, as perfect as can be. My intention was, says the Rambam, was to clarify, because throughout the Talmudic corpus, we have, of course, all kinds of dialogue back and forth here and there. And the Rambam was trying to create some clarity. The Yetzei Toz, the Pisuk Halochi, wanted to make the Psak Halocha clear. What a fascinating, fantastic Rambam. Remarkable language of the Rambam that he writes here. many, many personal elements, namely how he was completely enveloped and surrounded and engulfed by many, many issues and the like. And he himself clearly was ill for an extended period of time. But primarily, this letter indicates clearly that the Rambam did not utilize science to enhance his Avas Hashem. That was not how the Rambam saw Avas Hashem. From the Rambam came through Talmud Torah, through the study of Torah. That was from the moment he was young. That was the love of his youth. But the idea of philosophy and science is only to abet and to aid in the understanding of the Torah. And at the same time, to present a worldview to the nations of the world. So coming back to the thesis that we mentioned a moment ago from Hagoyin Labarna, Levi Salavesi Zatzal. So there are many Rabbanim who claim that one should not attend university or college unless there's a need for a livelihood, for parnasa. It's a means to an end, as opposed to being an end in itself. And Rabbanu Levi Soloveitchik even commented then that in the circumstances that we live today, and probably Bizmanenu Anu, it may be true even more so, Kavachom ben Menoshe Kavachomer, that one is more likely to succeed in business than scientific research. How many scientists are wealthy? Maybe with the exception of Pfizer and Moderna and those companies who are able to put together this unbelievable vaccine. But from the point of view of earning a living, why should one need a lengthy university education? There are doctors at one time that became very, very wealthy, but to say that someone should study medicine as a source of living and a source of wealth, that would probably not be true. And today, kal v'chomer menoshe kal v'chomer. I think I mentioned Derech Agav a number of times that when I speak to young students in my yeshiva, at one time there was a relatively large interest in people becoming doctors and lawyers and professional engineers, et cetera, and psychiatrists and psychologists. Today, the bulk of the yeshiva students in my yeshiva, and I suspect they're reflective of very much what's going on in the world at large, they have one interest, and the interest is really underlined by one pasuk, v'hakesev yaneh sakol. The more quickly I can get to that goal, that's the interest that I have. Essentially, they either want to be businessmen or accountants or involved in investments or anything that will hopefully bring as quickly as possible those greenbacks, those sterling. I don't know if I can mention the South African rand, whatever coinage will, shall we say, fill their pockets. That seems to be the thrust of their interest. And there are less number of people, fewer people today studying medicine than there were before. And maybe that's a good thing. I have several mechutanim who are doctors, and they told me, if someone wants to be a doctor, make sure it's lishmo. It's l'shem refuah. That's his sole interest. He wants to be a doctor. He wants to help the world. He wants to do chesed. And undoubtedly, if a certain doctor studies medicine exclusively for the purpose of earning money and not for the sake of helping people, how would you entrust your lives in the hands of such a person? And there's a din in Shulchan Aruch on page number 4. You can see it actually in Yerodeh and Shin Lamed Vav. But the Mechaber Paskins, HaRofei also litzol schar ha-chochma va-limud. Ava schar ha-torach va-batola mutter. You're not allowed to be paid to heal others. Just as you cannot receive money for teaching Torah, as the Mishnah writes in Bechoros and the Gemara comments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches Torah b'chinam, Ma'ani b'chinam, afatem b'chinam. That's also one of the areas of Mitati Odei. So the only payment that a doctor is halakhically allowed to accept is compensation for his time, namely schar batola. Earning a livelihood is an endeavor that overrides the iser of failing to study Torah at any given time. We saw the Gemara already in Brachos, Naflam and Hay, a number of times. Yosafta de Gonecha, Hani ben Minig de Acheretz. But earning a living can also sometimes involve minimalistic education and effort. So the true justification for in-depth study should not be excused as a means to financial success. Rather, it's an attempt to help the world and perhaps establish oneself. And therefore, coming back to the original thesis that was mentioned to me by a number of individuals after the last series of Shiurim, not everyone is required to pursue a Torah and Chochmah, a Torah and Mada, a Torah and Deacheret kind of program on the basis of all perspectives on the issue. Clearly, whatever direction a person chooses, the primary source for Avas Hashem is Limud HaTorah, unquestionably. And that's what Abaron HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal indicated very clearly. And around a person's other talents and qualities, a supplemental advancement can be constructed. If our lives are meant to blend Torah and the Darkei Ha'olam into a perfect piece of artwork, so how do we explain the conflicts between our emuna and scientific ways of thinking? Which would seem that these antimonies and these difficulties, often antithetical philosophies, perhaps that may be a proof against any attempt to combine these elements. And so there are different types of conflicts between the world of Torah and the world of science. And maybe we'll address that again based on what I heard from Hagoyin Abayin Halevi Salavetsu Zatzal. One is a specific conflict, which means there's a discrepancy between the halacha in the Torah and scientific knowledge. Then there would be a general conflict in the theories and foundations of Emunah. And we're talking about, let's begin with a description of biological or organic evolution. Debates on these issues are not new to our door. Go way back to the days of the Rishonim, the days of the Rambam, the days of Rav Sadia Gaon. Let's begin by just examining some of these issues very briefly. And again, I'm just citing to what I heard from Hagoyin Rabban Halevi Soloveitchik Zatzal. The Gemara has a well-known sugi in Brachas on the Avodah Zarah, page number 5. A very striking Gemara. Generally, people start learning Brachas at a very young age. Tanya Abba Binyamin Omer, Ilmolei, Nitna Rishus La'ayin Liros, Enkol, Beria, Yechol Lamba, Bnei Mazikin. The Gemara speaks about Mazikin, and sometimes the Chazal describe them as Shedim, sometimes they describe them as Ruach Ra, all types of spirits, all types of evil winds, or demons, if you will. And the Gemara goes on there, Amar Abayu, Inu Nefishim Inan, V'kaimi Alon Kikisla Lu'ugya. So we're talking about that these mazikim, or these shedim, or these ruach asuros, they're everywhere. Amar Avuna kol chad v'chad minan alfa mismolye v'ruvasa mimine. That we have all these demons that are floating in the air, thousands to our right, thousands to our left. The Gemara describes in a very dramatic terminology. Omar Rav, hay duchko, da'avi bechala, minayu have, ani birka de shili, minayu have, money da abon de bala mechufyo, didu ani kani de mankava, minayu. And the Gemara gives you a way to find out or to somehow ferret out all these demons. So the question is, in terms of scientific reality, these notions are not in consonance with science. Modern data has no place for all these supernatural beings with black wings, as the Gemara described, thousands to our right, thousands to our left. So in the days of Rav Sadia Gaon and the days of the Rambam, this issue in particular became a major focus of controversy. And there were many who were split whether we should understand these topics literally or figuratively. This is a well-known issue that's discussed. And Abayin Soloveitchik weighed in on this issue and commented, based on the Rambam and Pirush HaMishnayos. The Rambam in a number of places, in Pirush HaMishnayos, both in Erevin and Pirush HaMishnayos in Shabbos, the Rambam seems to present the following explanation. All these invisible demons are thousands of germs, microbes, that are to our right and to our left. The Gemara in Erevin, the Gemara in Daf Mem Aleph on the Beis, presents the case of a man who was carried or forced to walk out 2,000 amos beyond the city limits by a ruach ra, and who incidentally is not allowed to work further when he recovers, when he is able to once again come back to himself. And the Rambam, as you can see on page number 6, the Rambam uses a lashon when he discusses ruach ra. Take a look at the top of page 6. Korin the kolminei. That language is melancholia. The Rambam speaks about a kind of melancholia. We're familiar with that terminology. And the Rambam goes on to say over there, he's describing the Mishnah in Shabbos that we say every Friday night, Ashkenazim. Many Sfaradim also say this Mishnah. HaMechabes HaNeb, Neshu Mesyarim, Negoyim, Nelistim, of Neruach Ra. The person is frightened, whether he's frightened of non-Jews are frightened of robbers, are frightened of some sort of ruach ra, and he extinguishes in there. what's known in halachic parlance as a melacha shein atzurah legufa. And the Mishnah, again, is referring to the machlokes tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And we pass in like Rabbi Shimon, melacha shein atzurah legufa is potter. Potter always means hilchos Shabbos potter avol aser. The Rambam happens to pass like Rabbi Yehuda. Melacha shein atzurah legufa is chayav. So here the Mishnah tells you, in all these cases, since we pass like Rabbi Shimon, my interest is not kibui. Anyway, kibui min haTorah is only when a person creates pechomim, when you create coals. But if you're extinguishing in there for all kinds of reasons, because of fear, because of ruach ra, cholo sheyishon, Mishnah says pata. So the Rambam defines this as a kind of disruptive force, a kind of melancholia. And he goes on to say, v'yesh mehem min shubarech u'misrachik min ha'izun ha'nafshi, shero or, he can't handle the light. Okshu cheras b'nei adam, he can't handle other individuals. He's a kind of misanthrope. When does he become ragua? When is he able to somehow regain his composure? When he's in the dark, in solitude. We find this kind of personality with those who are suffering from depression or melancholia. So how did the Rambam interpret Ruach Ra? In psychological terminology, the Rambam interprets it. And similarly, in Masechah Shabbos, this is very well known to all of us. Every morning we wash our hands 3 times when we wake up in the morning. The Gemara says in Shabbos, on Kuf Teh, Samad Aleph, in order to rid ourselves of Ruach Ra, the Goyin was makpid to wash his hands 4 times. So many intellectuals who analyze these sugyas in Shas, they came to the conclusion that Tanoim and Amoraim were very superstitious. That's the understanding that they came to, which of course is completely incorrect. And what is the true explanation? So Abaron HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, and there are other approaches to this as well, but this was his approach to all these sugyas, that the Gemara is talking about when it speaks of Ruach Ra, or if you will, mazikin, or shaden, or all the above, refers to invisible, destructive factors such as germs that are microscopic in nature. So therefore, one who's unaware of poor sanitary conditions can become afflicted with glaucoma or other kinds of eye diseases. And therefore, the Gemara tells us to wash our hands 3 times. Even though obviously today we have undoubtedly more effective methods of cleansing our hands than simply pouring water over them. And yet we're not allowed to modify this halacha on the basis of the times. This is the concept of Ruach Ra. If you take a look in page 7, another Rambam, in Erevin, and again, the Mishnah that I alluded to a moment ago, Misho Tziyu Goyim, or Ruach Ra, Englo Ala Abba Amos, Echziru Kiru Lo Yotza. So the Rambam comments again over here in Pirsha Mishnayis. What is Ruach Ra? On page 7, Korim kol mitzuka hapogas bekosha hafchanosu shel adam. Tia sibasa shetia. Any destructive kind of force, any mitzuka, any situation of anguish, of difficulty that affects my ability, my cognitive ability, my ability to function. Tia sibasa shetia. And then the Ram goes on to interpret the Mishnah. So we can apply, said Abaron HaLevi Soloveitchik, this definition of the Rambam to other instances in the Gemara where Shedim are mentioned as well. There's a famous Mishnah, Maseches Gittin, in the 6th Perek, where the Mishnah speaks of a person who's in a bor, someone in a pit, and he yells to those outside the pit, Kisu get leishti. He asks them to go ahead and write a get to his wife. He's in the bor, and he asks that a get should be written to his wife, so they can write the get. And the Gemara asked the Kasha, the Gemara in Gittin, asked the question on Daf Samach Vav and Aleph, why don't we assume that maybe they heard a shed, maybe it was a demon, maybe it was some spirit who was in effect calling them from the pit? So the Gemara answers, no, they saw a shadow, they saw some sort of a tail. However, the Gemara is still bothered because Shedim also have shadows. A shade, the demon, these spirits also have shadows. So therefore, the Gemara concludes that what did they see? They saw mavoa de mavoa, a shadow of a shadow. And that, the Gemara indicates, is not something which is inherent in a shed. A shed may have a shadow, but does not have a shadow of a shadow. His own shadow does not cast another shadow. And you have a number of rayas from Gemaras to this effect. So here also, what are we talking about when the Gemara speaks about shed? We're talking about some invisible destructive force. And in this case, shed would refer to, said Abarin Alevi Salavetzi Zatzal, the figment of the listener's imagination that could cause harm to the shalom bayis of a husband and wife. That's what the Mishnah and the Gemara are talking about. Because many people, when they're frightened, they tend to imagine all kinds of things. They tend to hear sounds that really don't exist. And sometimes they can hallucinate. And the hallucination can be very lifelike. And based on this psychological insight, Rabban Soloveitchik explained what the Gemara is saying. Shadim, said Rabban, having shadows, refers to the fact that hallucinations that can be detrimental and all types of imagery could often be lifelike. But if one sees a bavoa de bavoa, a shadow of a shadow, something which is only perceivable in reality, that is too clear to be hallucination. Then you know it's not real. Then you know it's not imagery which is detrimental. If you'll take a look at the Meiri, that's how the Meiri learns pshat in this Gemara. So we see Gdolei Rishonim are interpreting these kinds of Gemaras in this kind of a fashion. And there are other places in the Talmud where if a person has proper scientific knowledge, it will certainly lend a very healthy outlook on passages that are often misunderstood and misconstrued. Rabban Soloveitchik told over a story. He said that once he was in a shul in Manhattan, he was waiting between Mincha and Ma'ariv, and as is the custom, many Rabbanim speak between Mincha and Ma'ariv, and so he heard a Rav explain the Gemara in the third parak of Shabbos, which is found in front of you on page number 8, a Gemara in Daf Lamed Tes, in Perek Kira. And he felt that the Gemara is being interpreted incorrectly, in a misleading kind of way, because he took the Gemara, the Rav, in a very literal kind of fashion. And Rabban Soloveitchik felt that this was not the correct approach to the sugya. The Gemara speaks here about Rabbi Yossi, who indicates that if a person takes food and on Shabbos puts it in Chamei Tveria, puts the food in the hot springs of Tveria, so the Gemara indicates, according to Rabbi Yossi, Yechai Mishul Bishul. That's called an act of Bishul on Shabbos, and Yemuchid to bring a Karban Chatas. Again, Bishogeg, person is Mechal Shabbos, you're being a Korban Chatas. So the question that was asked of Rabbi Yossi, why should the hot springs of Tveria, which are Teva, which are very natural, why should that be the same as Eish, such that cooking by means of the Chami Tveria should be also on Shabbos? Rashi Kaseder writes throughout Shas, and this is the discussion whenever we encounter the issue of Bishul, whether it's Lo Sabashu Gdi B'Chalivima, whether it's Bishul Basu B'Cholov, a bishul in other areas of Torah, but certainly when it comes to Hilcha Shabbos, derech bishul asur Torah, which is also a concept in halacha, but Rashi always speaks of bishul bu'ur, bishul with fire. There's a question in halacha regarding, let's say, the use of a microwave on Shabbos. Of course, a microwave is asur. We're talking about the electricity, whatever chashmal, whatever the issue with chashmal is, whether it's according to the Chazon Ish and Issa Daraisa. We're talking about Soser and Boner, according to Rashi Zaman Oyabaz Zatzal, and Issa Darabonah, but certainly some Issa is existing over here. But putting that aside for a second, in terms of the act of Bishul, is the microwave a violation of Bishul? There's a machlegis, it's an Agoin Amesha Feinstein and Agoin Rashi Zaman Oyabach, Zecha Tzadikim Levachah, regarding the use of a microwave. Because since Derech Bishul Asa Torah, a microwave may not very well be Derech Bishul, because it works with electromagnetic waves, it doesn't work. This is the subject of a lot of discussion by Professor Lev, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, from Machon Lev, and he wrote many, many articles, both Chiddushei Torah, as well as also scientific pieces on this issue. So the question the Gemara raises here is Chamei Tveria. What's the status of Chamei Tveria regarding Bishul on Shabbos? So the Gemara answers the bottom line of Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, that Omer Lahu, Hahu told us Urhu, the Chalfi Apischa Dianim. Rabbi Yossi answered, these hot springs have the status of fire because they pass by the entrance to Gehenna. What exactly does the Gemara mean? What's the intention of this statement in Chazal? Of Rabbi Yossi, when the Gdolei HaTanoim, they pass by a piece of the Gehenna. So the Rav, in that shul of Manhattan, between Mincha and Maariv, explained that Gehenna, in terms of the translation most often used, means what we know it means. It's spelled in English, H-E-L-L. I sometimes call it Hades. I don't mean the country. I mean there, downstairs, that area. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik noticed that the Balabatim sitting in the shul were very amused by this bit of law. To think that the hot springs pass through such territory? Is that what the Gemara means? That hot springs pass through the entrance to Gehenim? You look at any encyclopedia, you look at the major encyclopedias of my day, there were the World Encyclopedia, Britannica Encyclopedia. Today, I don't know if anyone knows what an encyclopedia is. Probably not, because they don't read anymore. No one reads anything. But let's assume one has some concept that there's something called an encyclopedia. And I guess for everyone, for most people, it's the Google. So you find that hot springs, there are hot springs in a number of different places. Let's say in the United States, I can tell you about the hot springs in Colorado. There were originally volcanoes, cracks in the crust of the earth, and molten rock erupted from those cracks. As a matter of fact, if you look in Sefer Yirmiyahu, the Yirmiyahu HaNavi, in Perek Yutes, Sukim Dalvad, Hey Vav, the Navi speaks of a place where these pagan priests would sacrifice children to the Melech, a form of idolatry, putting them through fire. Well, no, Machlokes of Rishonim, what exactly Melech is, there are different positions among the Rishonim, but Melech was a valley in Yerushalayim known as Gei Ben Hinnom, the site of a volcano. So the connection between the volcanic fire and Gei Ben Hinnom is supported by the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Pirsha Mishnayos that the colloquial use of Gehenim or Gei Hinnom is adapted to the name of that volcanic valley. So therefore, Sarah Baron Soloveitchik, what Rabbi Yossi means over here in the Gemara and Shabbos and Daf Lamites, is that the heat of the hot springs of Tveria is of volcanic origin. And that's why the Gemara uses the expression Chalfi Apischa the Gehenim, that it passes by the entrance to Gehenim. And this, he thought, is the Pshuto Shel HaTalmud, the simple pshat in the Talmud based on the Rambam in Pirsha Mishnayos. So there are many conflicts that exist between common scientific knowledge. And perhaps we'll mention one more, and then Bli Neder, we will continue on this topic the next while. There is a famous Gemara that occurs a number of times in Shas. It's a Gemara that's well known to all of us. It's in Makkos, it's in Psochim, a few other places as well. The Gemara talks about Ochal Tzira. The Gemara discusses how many lavin would a person get for eating certain types of small creatures? So the Gemara speaks about a tzira. We know that tzira is a pasuk mentioned in Chumash. V'gam asa tzira yishalach Hashem elokecha bom aravon hanishorim vanistorim mipanecha. So you eat this creature, you receive six sets of malchios. And the Rambam in Kayadua, in the Hakdama to Sefer HaMitzvos, in the Shoroshim, the 14th Shoroshim, the Rambam lays down the postulates, the principles, how we know whether you count something as one lav, or two lavim, or three lavim, or six lavim, what exactly the rule of thumb is, what is the criteria. So the Rambam enumerates here on pages number 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and the lav kufayin test in the number 179. When the Rambam enumerating the violations in eating a tzira, so he lists this creature as a bug that lives in the water and is capable of flight, a remarkable kind of creature, among other characteristics and all types of impurities. And seemingly, when the Rambam compiles all the surim, all the lavim that are involved in eating tzira, so the Rambam seemingly contradicts himself. Because the Rambam writes at one point, you can see this very clearly over here, that this tzira, what is the origin of this tzira? So the Rambam indicates this tzira originates through ipush, through decay. If you take a look at the Rambam, page number 14, I put a check mark over there. You can actually see it. After he goes through a discussion, and he tells you, starting from the top of the page, when he speaks about minim rabim, that you chayev many, many malkios, and you have a lot of altishatsu, and the Rambam indicates v'im yichubar, the third line, elzeh sheyezeh ha-bal chayim me'atzmo ha-misyali min ochel ov, gam kin chayev ha-malkos shishi, v'shem es'elet tishatsu min ha-ov, lo tochlu b'lo tachi, kisyalet ov me'ipush v'ha-peros, roim tamid ofos yisyaldu min ipushim yosef v'dolim min ha-egos ha-kodun. So the Rambam speaks about the origin, and at the same time, he includes the Isurim of Sheretz Aretz, creatures that crawl on the land, which by definition originate through male-female reproduction. And that's, take a look at the Rambam carefully, you'll see that's what he writes over here. And the Rambam himself points out this contradiction right here in the Sefer Mitzvos. There's an inherent oxymoron element over here in terms of these kinds of creatures. And Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal contended that the Rambam knew, just as Pasteur later demonstrated, there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. It's not existent, such a concept. All creatures originate through a male-female reproduction. But the Rambam also knew that certain beings require what he calls ipush, a culture of decay, in order that they should reproduce. Such beings, they need an environment of decay and disintegrated living matter, don't conform to the high degree of living of those animals that were used in the Mishkan. The Elim that the Torah speaks about, the Elim Adomim, which were the ewes that were slaughtered in the Mishkan, represent the level of being that we will not destroy on Shabbos. But a creature which reproduces only an ipush of decay will not obligate a carbon if it's being killed on Shabbos. Again, the point being that our understanding of Torah does not contradict our knowledge of science in any way. So we have a number of issues, and perhaps we'll raise, believe me, there in the next year, a few more issues that Avraham Soloveitchik also addressed. And I think that it's remarkable to see the approach of one of the Gedolei HaDor to many of these areas, which are very significant. A number of years ago, a nephew of Avraham Soloveitchik, Zatzal, a Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Meiselman Shlita, Hagoyin Rabbi Meiselman, was Rosh Hashiva of Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, an American Yeshiva, Teras Meshe, HaMechuna Tomo. So he also edited and wrote actually a very fascinating work on science and Torah. And those who have an interest could actually read it carefully, where he addresses many of these issues. A lot of what he says, he quotes his uncle, Hagoyin Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal from Boston, and he was also very close to both of his uncles, both Agoin Rav Yeshudov HaLevi Soloveitchik, that he cites heavily in the book, as well as Agoin Rav Aaron HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, that he was extremely close to both of these Trey Tzantri Didava, these two golden rods that I mentioned many times. And so there you can actually see a lot of these issues that are spelled out. His approach is a bit more fundamental in nature, and it's kedai to examine this. This needs a fair amount of study. So those who have a lot of time on their hands and have the ability to go through many of these sugyas are certainly invited to go so and examine all the different desideratum, of which there is no shortage of, both in Rishonim and Achronim, and even in the moderns who write about this topic as well.
Yeshikach, Rav David. Can I ask you a question?